to the fourth plan and reduce...
No, Ofsted framework.
Oh, Ofsted framework, sorry. Mm-hmm. New Ofsted school framework. Right. I do apologise. Eric, I need to pass on for your time.
That's okay. I'll be pithy to the point about this. I think the first thing to say is that what I presented to you are some ideas about a consultation. So it could all change. So I guess that gives me reason to speak over it, not get too caught up there. But I think in some ways it aligns quite nice with the conversation we just had. So there is a new inspection framework coming. Schools will be inspected from the autumn, from September to this current year under a new framework. And it's currently being piloted and consulted upon, practiced and consulted upon. So I think it's interesting to note what's behind it. The bottom line is that the bottom line is that Ofsted have a view that they have contributed to this focus on data that doesn't mean very much. Their answer to that is to say, well, what else should we focus on then? Their suggestion is that what the inspection should focus on is what education matters. And by that, they mean the curriculum. In other words, what it is that's actually being taught. So there's a specific move in this new framework away from performance measures as the entire determination of an Ofsted outcome, in order to encourage the school's leaders stop trying to second guess Ofsted judgments by gaming the performance measures instead of doing what's right for children. Now, I think as Brian has said, we actually have not seen Ofsted in a position where they've not been open to discussion on that, but actually leaders fear that they will not be minded to accept that conversation when it's needed. And that has led to a considerable amount of effort and time going into getting graphs right to present to Ofsted inspectors, perhaps at the expense of getting lessons right, and particularly the pathways of children through the different key stages, and enormous workload concerns as a result of that. Teachers spend a lot of time getting performance information sorted out rather than on lesson planning, is the idea behind it. There are two online documents that are out in the domain. One of them is the research basis and the other is the draft framework. Put the links there, should you have a look at them. Ofsted are pretty clear in their mind that what they've done is looked at international research on what is an effective curriculum, what is an effective education, in line with the right of any government to determine what it wants children to learn. They're also pretty determined to look hard at what they review now as poor leadership practices, such as off-rolling children so they don't appear in your data, or by gaming the system to get any qualification as long as it adds up right. So they're now calling those poor practices. There's a lot in the new framework which stays the same. So there is still an overall effectiveness grade. There's still a look at early years and sixth form separately. The same four grades will exist. There has been a debate about whether to have those, but they've landed. There was a sense that they were thinking, should we just have a binary, either you're a good school or you're not. They also talk about not having an effect, overall effectiveness grade. But in the end, they've come back down to agree that that would be the case, and then they carry on focusing on safeguarding. They still are intent that the inspections they make of schools that are currently good, that still they call those Section 8 monitoring inspections, still start with the presumption that the school's likely to still be good, rather than coming and doing another full inspection. There are changes, however, in the way they are structuring those inspections. In the current framework, there are two separate judgments on teaching, learning, and use of assessment and outcomes. But both of those areas are being conflated into one judgment called quality of education, and personal development, behaviour, and welfare are being split into two separate judgments. So it's a restructuring of the framework in order to give greater weight to this something called quality education, and to give separate recognition of those elements of behaviour and personal development. So, in terms of the way they're looking at running those inspections, those are the changes they're looking at. Their suggestion is that they'll put 2 days instead of the current 1 day into the inspection of currently good schools. And also, they're asking schools whether they'd like them to come the day before the inspection to undertake their administration on site. I think the reality is that given that the inspections for monitoring good schools are meant to be light touch, leaders are not very happy with the idea that instead of turning a 1 day inspection into a 2 day inspection, and then adding on another half a day before it, suddenly feels like it's a 3 day inspection, not a 2 day inspection. And I would be surprised to see the preparation on site. What leaders want to do is they want to throw their arms around the staff, calm them all down, and get them focused, not have an inspector sat in a dark room somewhere trying to be helpful to them. So I'd be very surprised to see that part come through the consultation. And I'm not sure the 2 days will be acceptable either, but we'll see. Early years is pretty much as it is now. I think we're encouraged to see that it's still the same. Characteristics of effective learning, looking at how early years actually develop. It ought to be its own key stage, it ought to be its own judgment because of its basis as a fundamental foundation for learning. Sixth forms have still got their separate grade. Special schools, education centres, in particular, there's recognition of the vulnerability of the students in those settings. There will be an increased look at what students are doing if they're not on the site of an education centre or a school. Inspectors will be required in this consultation to visit off-site alternative provision and check it out. And I think we would welcome that because there is the possibility there is some gaming and off rolling by name, not looking carefully at the quality of what's there. Well, there's recognition that some of those activities will be about re-engagement with students and improving attitudes to learning and before they can get back on board their GCSE activities. I guess our questions about what we might have seen in that framework, there's not as much about the technical vocational routes to learning, there's not as much about careers and employability we might have expected there to be, given they've got a chance to relook at the whole thing. Still seems to us to be a little based on that academic EMAC qualification route rather than others. So the consultation has 5 questions. Do you agree having just the 1 quality of education? Do you agree with separating behaviour and personal development? And there's a further question about data specific to which I'm going to pick up. Do we agree with having 2 day inspections and being on site? I think question 4 and 5 would like to be to a resounding no, but at least they're asking the question, which means they must recognise this is a contentious thing to be asking. So, in that quality of education, the key question, as I've already learned, is what is the quality of the curriculum? So then the shift away from data means inspectors asking the question, if we look at what you are expecting to teach, does it make sense? Is it in an order? Does it have clear standards in it that makes us believe that if children studied this curriculum, would they end up well educated? Rather than show us all of your predictions of GCSE grades when the children are year 7, which everybody knows is complete nonsense, doesn't make any sense, and pulls teachers into making completely erroneous but official looking graphical representations of what the GCSE results could be like in 5 years. Instead of saying, can you show us what history you're teaching in year 7 and how it represents a really good foundation for children to work through key stage 3? So the focus is going to be much more on the curriculum. And if children are making good progress in the curriculum, they will end up with good standards. That's the presumption. Key stage 1 priority on fluency in mathematics and in reading. particularly phonics. And at Key Stage 2 and 3, at Key Stage 3 is that year 78-9, an absolute determination that the curriculum is not being narrowed, not being narrowed away from that full range of subjects in order to suit EPAC type of conversation. If there is an EPAC conversation about it, it shouldn't be had in year 7. It should be being had in year 10, when for GCSE choices, not in year 7, so that we're restricting the number of children taking those subjects in year 7 and 8 and 9. Some of our children are basically not doing art very much from year 8 onwards. And that's just wrong. That's not an education, that's a GCSE curriculum for an EPAC qualification. And I think we would be happy to see that. So the focus in inspection would be looking at the curriculum planning that's in the school, be looking at whether children are making progress through that. So there'll be a focus on talking to subject leaders rather than data leaders. Be looking at curriculum planning and schemes of work rather than looking at internal data. In fact, inspectors have been told not to look at the internal data. That is a massive change in the focus of inspection activity. So what do we think about that? We think it's quite a good idea in intention, but actually that's a hell of a lot of stuff that's been put together in one judgment area. So there's a query, are you really going to be able to do very much more than this? Are you really going to be able to cover this in the time that's available for one judgment? I think the other risk that there are in the way that they're defining curriculum, the way they're defining curriculum is very much knowledge. And the difficulty, as soon as you say the curriculum is things that children remember how to do, remember from what they're being taught, it could encourage more of a chalk-and-talk approach to teaching and learning. There's no evidence that a chalk-and-talk approach to teaching and learning enables children to be better equipped for life. We could have a whole industry of teachers buying or writing schemes of work. It's not necessarily the same as good teaching. Assessment, which we know the assessment makes sense, is assessment that actually encourages teachers to adapt their teaching, could be replaced by assessment of whether the lesson has worked and children remembered things. That might not have the desired impact that we want. I think there's a danger we'll end up with children, now we know inspectors will look at books, children will be encouraged to write more and more and more in their books. Because if you can't show the data, you have to show the very full books, because otherwise how do you show what progress looks like? And we know that when teachers start to fill up books, instead of getting children to think and talk to each other, that also is not the thing to be encouraged. And actually, whilst of course we know reading is important, actually children from 5 to 7 should not have their curriculum narrowed to being just reading and maths. In early years, it's very clear all of the areas of learning are important. They say it's really important in Key Stage 2 when the children are 7, but it's all right between 5 and 7. That doesn't make any sense. So you widen the curriculum, you narrow it, and then you widen it again. I think reading is important, but it isn't that important. It's not as important. It's no more important, actually, in education as developing creativity, raising awareness of the world in which children live. I'm sorry, but I personally don't accept that definition of what education in infant school stage should be. What about the proposed separation of behaviour and attitudes? There's no surprise in what the framework covers under behaviour and attitudes. Questions might be, a lot of the framework is about behaviour management. It's as if you've got a set of rules, everything will be fine. And there's no mention of children with social, emotional, and mental health. In fact, it's quite a time since we've heard children being talked of as just people with children who have behaviour, instead of social and emotional developmental needs. I think there's some interesting unpicking of that. Makes it sound like the inspection is going to focus on whether you've got a code of conduct, rather than whether you're meeting the needs of children, some of whom are quite damaged, as we've heard earlier on today. Exclusion is an area I think that we'll need to come back and look at, because it states that exclusion is both really essential and perfectly awfully damaging. Well, there's an interesting conversation to have. Is exclusion good or bad? Is essential and damaging? There's still some work to be done on what the balance between those two things is, isn't there? In terms of personal development, again, nothing we'd see there that's particularly not expected. Fundamental British values, character education, citizenship, etc., etc. I think the problem is that none of that is in the curriculum. There is no citizenship curriculum. There is no PSHE curriculum in the national curriculum. So therefore, and if it's not a qualification, and it's not a subject, it's not in the national curriculum, the question might be, where's the time going to come from to do it? So it's all very well having all of these ideas, but where is it learned, how is it acquired? There's no mention of the sex and relationship education requirement on schools, which has only just been announced. So I think there'll be something that will have to be addressed. And also, a lot of this is about making children into things, rather than helping children find out who they are, what their view of the world is, what how they fit and how they get on with people who don't fit. There's a rather deterministic view of what personal education is like. School's job is to mould children into productive people with character and grit. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have character and grit, but there's a bit more to developing personally than being a model pupil. And I think that's something for us to pick up a bit more. In terms of leadership, that focus on gaming, the focus on actually an effective school is a school where workload concerns have been thought about, where leaders haven't made up nonsensical systems of assessment, reporting, and graphing and counting at the expense of focusing on the right things, and that no teacher gets better without professional development to improve their teaching of the tricky curriculum. I think we welcome all of those things. And that certainly underlines for us what we've said for some time, which is the prime focus of any head teacher is to focus on teaching of the curriculum. Because the rest of it follows. If you've got good teaching, good curriculum, the standards will come. Rather than spending a lot of time on data systems and accountability measures. So do we think, the question is, do we think not looking at internal progress data is a good thing or a bad thing? I think the big question that leaders will probably pose is how big a shift is that? Because it sounds like a really big shift. We've moved from the three inspections that go from ago that said historic results are the only thing that matter. Don't show me your data. The last agency I had, Michael Wishaw, said, we know it's not as simple as that, so we want you to show us your current data because these are the real children we've got, not just the history. And now we've got an inspection framework that's saying it's not about data at all, it's about curriculum. Except when you actually read what Amanda Spielman is saying, she's not quite saying that. What she's saying is, yes, there's a shift in focus, but we're not going to take the foot off the pedal of standards. And what she means by that is that the published, we don't look at the internal data, but the published data we will look at. So that's where we've got to be a bit careful of the shape-shifting that appears to be happening here, because it seems we want our cake and eat it. We're going to still have the performance data, we just don't want schools to be obsessing about it. I think that will be the professional challenge. How will schools manage that? I think we would all want children to be set up to succeed for life rather than simply hop through exam hoops. Those are Amanda Spielman's work, who works for the HCTI. On the other hand, there's no sense that they're not going to be expected to have high standards in the performance management measures. And I think specifically, Ofsted will report on how much progress the school is making towards implementing the EPAC. So one needs to recognise and think that Ofsted is a regulator. It's a regulator of government policy, and if the government policy is for all schools to move to EPAC, it is duty bound to report on whether the school is, whether it believes in it or not. So it'd be interesting to see how Ofsted actually deals with that conversation. I think actually they're a bit not sure what they want to do with data. It sounds ever so encouraging to say we're not going to look at it, but actually if the only data you're looking at is end of key stage data, leaders might not welcome that actually. Are books a really reliable indicator of what will be happening in 4 years' time, 2 years' time, 1 year's time? Not sure. So the big questions I'll finish with are these, I think. I think schools are being thrown an opportunity, potentially, to say, okay, we'll take it at face value. This is what we believe an education should have in it. This is what we want you to take note of in the inspection. And we're no longer going to play the Ofsted game and try and second guess this. I think whether or not schools seize that opportunity, which is what the Ofsted are saying, will depend rather on how the inspections go in the autumn term. Because we'll see whether Ofsted, when they actually start implementing this, follow it through in the way that they set it out. And essentially, I think the critical question is this: at this point, schools with lower attainment outcomes in exam results, largely, let's be clear, largely predicted by the socioeconomic circumstances of their catchment, are not treated favourably by Ofsted, irrespective of whether their curriculum is a high quality curriculum that is well negotiated through the needs of the community. Statistically, if you're in a disadvantaged catchment, you will get a lower grade. So the question will be, will Ofsted call out schools who are exam factories who don't give a really good education to their children and not call them good or outstanding? And will they look at schools whose exam and test results are not the highest locally, but where the quality of education being provided for those children is first rate? We'll see.
Thank you for that, Eric. It's a bit chicken and egg. And I think the social side that you mentioned, I know at Palins there is a proportion of children that come from families who are on benefit where perhaps the parents aren't as clever. Sometimes the children are cleverer. And it makes a tremendous difference if you have a school where parents are very involved with their own children and with the school. And you've only got to look at good independent and private schools. The parents who usually send their children, usually, not like it, are themselves well educated and want their children to do the same. But with state schools, as you said, the catchment area can determine how good or bad the school is, in which case you can and occasionally get really dedicated teachers. And we have one or two heads across the country who've gone into really poor performing schools and completely turned them around. So it isn't one factor, it is essentially brilliant leadership at the top, managing to overcome the social disadvantages that can come inside an area.
I think what the profession is looking for is recognition of when that work is underway. I don't think there's any excuse and any attempt to want to excuse away not having high ambitions for children from a disadvantaged background, not rising and living and understanding that challenge, not accepting that children, because of a poor start in life, shouldn't have the same opportunities as others. However, having the recognition of the journey that takes, the high quality state that is involved in creating that, and having the time to do that, whilst also recognising that even when you do that, you may not be top of the pile of the attainment aid pile or the top of the reading and writing, reading and maths pile, but that does not mean that just because you're a mid-table, you haven't done an exceptional job. I think that's the nuance that the profession is asking for, and Ofsted are indicating that's what they want to do. And equally, I think it's as important to call out the other side of that, which is schools that have been exam factories, and that has an impact on the mental health of the children and young people in those schools. And some of them have been in the independent sector. The highest dropout rate at Cambridge and Oxford is from single-sex, independent girls' schools. And the dropout rate in first-year university for those students is because of the mental health issues that suddenly come up when suddenly they don't find it quite as straightforward as they were before because of the environment of them. So nothing is simple, as you say.
If we don't... Oh, yes, Councillor Andre.
Can I just quickly come in? Because it seems to be that there's a common theme going through here. So obviously, this is an opportunity, am I right, to actually reinforce what the others were saying, that this sort of drive towards the attainment date monitoring, as it were, this is our opportunity to say, actually, we don't agree. Am I right?
Yeah, I think, leaving aside the kind of science of attainment aid, it is the reality. There's a focus on high quality teaching in every year group to a curriculum that's well thought through and given proper time to, then the standards will take care of themselves rather than endless revision, practices, last minute pushes, picking up the gaps that have been created through not teaching effectively all the way through. I think that's what professionals can focus on.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you for that, Eric. Actually, that was quite fascinating and very informative, and I know I couldn't talk about that all evening. However, I will be quiet. And if we...
Note it.
I think we will note your report, and we'll just have to wait and see what finally comes out of it. I just hope they take into account the fact that on the Isle of Wight, we have a very low rate of ambition, unfortunately. Whether it goes with island mentality, I'm not sure, but a good friend taught in Brixton said to me, Vanessa, I've seen more ambition in a really poor school in Brixton than I see on the Isle of Wight. But I'm not sure how we get around that. Anyway, thank you for that, and we will know the report and wait and see what happens. I think they're getting better, Paul. I mean, that was a remark made to me probably about 8 or 9 years ago, but we have action now, and it's all improving.